Good afternoon. It is 1 p.m. We are here today, January 29th, 2025. We will be here in room suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagano, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPAPA 24-005, Pacific Federal Management Inc. versus the Guam International Airport Authority. Presiding over the hearing today is Public Auditor Benjamin J.F. Cruz. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability is Jared Hernandez and hopefully Vince Duenas. Will appellate PFM please identify themselves and any institutional re representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Public Auditor. My name is R. Marcel Johnson. I'm an attorney. I'm here representing Pacific Federal Management Incorporated, and I'm here with Mr. Robert Salas, who's the president of the company.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GIA please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Public Auditor. William Brennan for the Arula Law Firm on behalf of the Guam International Airport Authority. Present with me today is Ms. Katrina Baison, the Airport Supply Management Administrator.
Thank you. Will interested party Green Community Development, DBA Surface Solutions, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good afternoon, Shannon Titano for interested party Surface Solutions.
Even Kamaka, also here for Surface Solutions.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Council. I read the IL briefs. Was there a reason why we didn't have any motions before this? I know we had scheduled them and everybody said there wasn't going to be.
In the past, we've tried to file motions for summary judgment, but trying to avoid having to deal with a factual hearing. But given the fact that the OPA rules don't really allow for motions for summary judgment, they've typically been denied. So I didn't feel it was necessary or worthwhile to go ahead and try to file a motion for summary
Oh.
judgment.
And same for the airport. I think the most recent decision was actually in the CB 9522, where the Superior Court said, at least as to jurisdictional issues, they are mixed questions of law and fact. And I didn't see enough in PFM's admission of fact for me to bring forward a motion to dismiss or for summary judgment. So similarly, we think we need at least a minimal record for you.
Okay. Great. Are you ready to begin?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you wish to make opening statement? Or have you decided not to?
I can make just a brief statement.
Sure.
Given the unique nature of this hearing, this hearing was requested by by GIAA, the Airport Authority. As the public auditor is aware, only one party needs to request a hearing for there to be a hearing. The position of PFM is that the questions before the OPA right now are purely legal questions that really should be addressed through a brief of and through a trial brief or a post-hearing brief, which we plan to file after this. With respect to the witnesses that we put on today, and this is an opening statement, PFM doesn't really have any witnesses that we plan to put on, again, because the airport is the one that's requested this hearing. So I have identified two potential witnesses that we may call. One of them is Mr. Robert Salas, who's the president. The other one is Mr. Sid Valma, who is the RME for Pacific Federal Management. He's downstairs. So depending on what witnesses and what evidence the airport puts on, since they were the ones who requested this hearing, we may put on one or two witnesses. But at this point, we don't plan to put on any.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. That's correct. The airport did request a hearing. Our position would be on the jurisdictional issue of timeliness. We have a factual record to present to you, and we have the witnesses here to do that. On the issue of the actual licensure requirement in the IFB, we'd also like to lay out a sequence of events that demonstrates the airport did not act unilaterally. It consulted with both the Office of the Attorney General and the Guam Contractors License Board in reaching the conclusion that it did, and that will justify, at least in our view, why the airport took the actions that it did. Importantly, always at issue in these hearings is the purchasing agency's good or bad faith as to award of costs or fees. We think a factual record is necessary to defend the airport from any allegation that it acted in anything other than good faith. Thank you, Mr. Farber.
Thank you. Did you wish to make an opening statement or would that be no? Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. This was your hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Farber. We'll call the Executive Director of the DOE, Mr. Jonathan.
Please swear by your side. Please raise your right hand. Please state your name.
John P. Uggen.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Your witness.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. I'll stay seated if that's acceptable. Good afternoon, Mr. Uggen. So may I just ask, have you ever testified in a formal hearing or a courtroom before?
In my previous job, I was a firefighter, so we were brought to court many times.
Okay, and so you know that you're being recorded, there's a microphone in front of you.
Yes.
So just ground rule, please, answer audibly and make sure that, pull it closer if you need.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to first lay out that you're here under a subpoena today served by my office and issued by the Office of Public Accountability, correct?
Yes.
And you received that subpoena sometime last week?
Yes.
After you received that subpoena, you gave me a call. Do you recall that
phone call? I do recall.
And so if I understand that call, just very briefly, you hadn't heard anything about this case. You were wondering why you received a subpoena specifically.
Yes, exactly. We were tracking one. We have many cases at CLB. This was one of the ones we were tracking. So I just wanted to get a speed what company we were dealing with, what issue, and so I can just prepare myself, bringing out their license. Like I have a license, a copy of their license, and just the classifications of the different listings we have.
Understood. May I ask you? So you brought your NKN, you brought some documents. Could I just ask you to close that folder and set it aside?
Okay.
And then just to confirm, that was the first time you and I had ever spoke, was last week on a phone call.
Yes.
And then today was the first time you and I had ever met in person.
Yes.
Okay. And so we've never actually talked about this case beyond, I think I emailed you a link to the OPA's website for this case specifically.
Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect. Actually, Mr. Uggen, if it's okay, I just want to talk to you about a little bit about background, the CLB.
Okay, sir.
So for example, one of the topics I wanted to discuss today is the CLB's newest rules and regulations concerning contractor's licensure.
Yes.
Is that sufficient explanation for you to know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, and would that be rules and regulations that the CLB adopted sometime in 2024?
Very recent, yes.
Okay, do you recall the month?
Not the exact month, but I know it was a big deal. We were working it for a long time. It hasn't been updated for many years. We had a OPA did a look through our agency and found that there are some issues, and that was one of the issues.
And as the director of the CLB, if I were to show you documents that were related to your transmittal to the legislature of those rules and regulations, would you recognize these documents?
Yes, I would, sir.
Could I ask the OPA staff to project Exhibit D, the airport's Exhibit D, on the screen? And if you could go down to page two. So, for example, Mr. Uggen, do you recognize these documents?
Yes. Yes.
I'll represent to you. I believe these are maybe a version of the rules that were posted on the PCLB's website prior to the enactment of your new rules. Is that correct?
Yes.
So would you characterize these as the old rules?
Yes, sir.
Okay. May I see Exhibit C? Okay, and I'm now showing you what was previously codified at 25 GAR Chapter 12. Is this the same, but the codification of those old rules prior to the enactment of the rules you were describing earlier, the new rules in 2024?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have a question about this Exhibit C. Do you know why the Guam Contractors License Board had codified the rules and regulations for contractors' licenses in two places in the GAR?
No, I don't.
Okay, and to be clear, you, just back up, you only recently started as the CLB director?
Over a year.
But after these past iterations of the rules and regulations were adopted and codified?
I came in just before it was adopted. not the one that worked on it, but I'm the one that came in just when it was approved.
Before the 2024 rules were approved.
Yes.
So the older rules were, so what I've now shown you in Exhibit D and C, and what I'm about to show you in Exhibit B, those older rules you had nothing to do with.
Nothing at all.
Okay, I'll ask the staff to pull up Exhibit B, and I'm also going to ask another question. So you don't have an explanation as the COB director for why there were three different codifications of the old rules before.
I do not have an answer.
And was that, could I ask you, was that one of the problems you dealt with as you came in? Was that you had these conflicting rules everywhere?
Yes, we among a few, we had a lot.
Okay, but I mean, the different rules existing at different places. Okay.
Yes.
So, B is in Bravo. And I'm just going to show you the last one just so that we're clear. It's...
This is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is...
Oh, so then... Can we go to D as in Delta? Okay, so I'll just clarify for the record then. Initially, I thought we were showing Exhibit D as the old rules from the CLB website, that page with the blue graphic. I think this is now Exhibit D as in Delta. Can I just confirm this is another iteration that was codified of the old rules pre-2024 at 29 GAR Article 4?
Yes.
Okay, and again,
yes.
One of the issues now. Now, is it echo? Okay. I just want to make sure I'm pulling them up at the right. I think I got my order and stuff. But... So earlier I asked you if you'd recognize the documents that the COB transmitted to the legislature as Exhibit E.
Yes.
May I ask you, can we go down to page 2, please?
Next slide?
Yes. Oh, sorry, page 3. Sorry, 4. Okay, so may I ask you, do you recognize that letterhead?
Yes.
Is that the contractor's license board letterhead?
Yes.
In fact, I can see from here in the top right corner, John Piagin, executive director. Is that referring to you?
Yes.
And this would be the document that you transmitted to the airport, to the legislature, in April 2024.
Yes.
Okay, and then you, I don't envy you, but you had to go through the AAA process and guide these rules through that process.
Yes.
So isn't there a period of time that these have to sit at the legislature to see if the legislature will take any type of action on these?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with what the legislature did here?
I understood it that it was adopted.
Without action? Is that a fair characterization?
As far as I know, no action was taken. It was adopted.
And really, Mr. Agin, there was a question raised in the briefing about, what rules apply, why are there conflicting rules? Let's just put it on the table. As of today, January 29th, 2025, are these the rules that the Guam Contractors License Board is enforcing?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and the past rules, so what I've described in Exhibits Bravo, Charlie, and Delta, those are no longer valid and no longer being enforced by the CLB.
You're correct.
Okay, and at some point, is it your intent to have these codified in those rules place, through some type of interaction with the compiler of laws or appropriate
entity. It is the process of the compiler of laws. My understanding is the process is taking a time, but it's there.
Okay, so when I look at these contractors license boards, so if I were to go into the contractors license board today and apply for a contractors license A, B, or any of the C subspecialties, you would be following this rule and the procedure set on this document.
Yes.
Okay, what are you familiar with the current applications pending and review that has to be done by the COB pursuant to these rules for new applicants?
I understand the process, yes, sir.
Okay, and is the process, may I ask, is it going smoothly right now?
So my understanding, it is going smoothly.
So would you be able to estimate for me, for example, if I came in today and applied for a new C8 contractor's license, what that process would look like?
Yes, I can describe it.
May I ask you to generally do so?
Okay, individual wants to be licensed. They will come in and make their wish to one of our ladies in the front, what license they wish to be tested for. And so the one of the ladies in the front will get their name and get them interviewed first to see even if they meet the statute as far as doing the work, how many years they've done the work. So they have to meet 4 years of the actual work before they can be actually tested. So they will fill out a whole application if they're interviewed and they say, yeah, you met the time. They will fill out the application, put all the remarks of where they work, how much work they've done, and so on and so forth. And then when that's approved to be tested, I will sign off on it. They'll come in for a date that is written down to be tested. They come in, they test. There's always a legal test that comes with whatever license they're going to be licensed with. And then they take the test. If they many individuals can take maybe two or three tests, different license tests. Some of them take two or three tests a day. After that, if they're successful, they pass the legal portion. They get a pass for that. And then if they do fail, let's say electrical, they have an opportunity to retest. And if they fail again, then they have to do it in writing, request to the director, can they test a third time? If they fail a third time, then they'll have to come back after a year to retest for the electrical. But that legal passing will still count towards their license.
So I just want to make sure I understand. So there are legal requirements that have to be met before they move to testing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then once they meet those legal requirements, for example, in terms of experience, do they have to provide any documentation of experience, or does the contractor's license board take them at what they're worth?
No, they have to show proof. For example, their boss from their company that they work with will have a written statement of how many years they've worked, how many years they were employed, what they did while they were employed with the company.
Okay. And then you stated that, you know, people can take the test, but if they fail twice before they take a third test, they need permission from the executive director.
Approval to take a third time, sir.
And is that any subsequent, so third, fourth, fifth, they'll need approval each time or just every two times?
So first and second fail, you got to get a written request. Because, and that reason is that if they're failing by like 20%, they're failing 20%, then, you know, it's you're not close to passing. And that's where the executive director has that authorization to give them a third try if they're just missing it by 2 points, for example. And that's what I think about. Like, you're almost there. You just need to put more time into it. And I'll authorize that. If they fail a third time, they come back after a year.
After 1 year.
And there's nothing that executive director can approve that's not gonna happen. It has to be a year.
Understood. And you also said something that I just want to make sure is clear. Every subspecialty has a different test.
Every license has an exam, yes.
Okay, so A has a different test. Classification A, Contractor's License Board, is a different test from B.
Yes, sir.
Classification B is different from C1 through C68.
Yes, sir.
And classification C1 is different from C2 and so forth.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you said that when providing their qualification, they may need a letter from their boss. So there's actually a difference between an entity being licensed and a specific person being licensed. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir.
And when an entity, for example, has a license from the Contractor's License Board, they also need a responsible management employee
to practice under that responsible management employee.
Yeah. And does that responsible management employee also have to take a test?
Yes, sir.
And do they take a test for every single license type or just one test as an RME?
They only get licensed for the test that they exam for.
Okay. And so that's why, for example, some companies have an A, B, and several C subspecialty licenses, they tested for all of those license classifications.
Yes, sir.
And their RME has tested for all of those license classifications.
Yes, sir.
May I ask you, Mr. Again, so after, let's assume an applicant passes that test, so you have the legal requirement met, and now they've passed the test requirement, what's the next step for the Guam Contractors License Board?
So the applicant fills out all that, and part of it is like showing that they have $15,000 or more in their bank account. And that's because there's what they call fly by night kind of people that want to start a business, but there's no real, they're not real serious. And so So those things are answered before they even take the exam. The last part of getting licensed is paying for the license, but just before paying for the license is passing the exams. So they're vetted all the way to taking the exam. When you pass, congratulations, you passed. Go and pay for the license. They go pay for the license, come back with a receipt, and you get your license.
Yeah. And demonstrate that financial component, right?
Yes.
So they're not a fly-by-the-night operation.
Yes, sir.
And to be clear, so this doesn't need action then to go up to the board for every single license?
No, sir.
So this process is completed once they pass the test, make the payment, demonstrate their financial viability?
Yes, sir.
Now, let me ask you, could you estimate for an A license right now, January 2025? What's the average time it takes to get through that process?
Well, sir, a perfect scenario. Look, we start off the first month. You come in, you get interviewed, you do all the applications, you got all your papers in line. You can test in 2 weeks. You got their study material. They give you a study material. You come in and you test in 2 weeks. If you pass that test in 2 weeks, sir, you can get a license that day.
So it could be as little as 2 weeks. What's the longest you've seen?
Some people never get licensed sometimes.
And that is because there are parts that require not only action from the COB, but also from the applicant.
Yes, sir.
They have to pass a test.
Pass a test. Sometimes the holdup is at revenue tax. If we require you your bank statements and this and that, and revenue tax has an issue with that, that can be a holdup. And that's outside of our hands. But there's things that have to be met.
Yeah, so there are moving pieces beyond the COB that could affect the time it takes from application to licensure.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you have truly 2 weeks may be the shortest, but you have no estimate of how long it could take because of all these other moving pieces.
Truly, some of them just sometimes never get licensed, sir.
The last part I want to talk to you a little bit about GCLB operations is what you regulate. So obviously, the COB can go out to a job site where there's clear construction activity. That is something you regulate, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you would go and check that person operating or those employees are working for a licensed person or entity, correct?
Yes, sir.
But isn't it true that the COB also regulates people advertising as contractors?
For sure, sir.
So you could stop someone, for example, for offering services for which they are not licensed?
Yes, sir, we have.
You have done that. Yes, sir. Mr. Agin, thank you very much. I'm sorry to take you away from
No problem. Schedule.
That's all the questions I have for you at this time.
Maybe I'll
reserve.
Thank you.
Mr. Prabhupada, I'll turn to the lady.
Good afternoon, Mr. Agin.
Good afternoon.
I've got some follow-up questions to what Mr. Brennan asked you. Do you know when the new rules for the CLB were put into effect?
I know in the year 2024, mid part 2024, because the process was so, we had to route it through OPA for signature, Attorney General's Office for signature, the Governor's Office for signature, down towards the legislature for signature. So I don't know the exact date. I'm sure I could reach back and find out. But sometime mid 2024, very recent.
Could I have the exhibit for the new rules? I believe it's exhibit E. Can we see that? I think this is page 2. Let me scroll up to page 1. Might be the page after this.
Yeah, page. The next page is good.
There's no certification of the group page in the first page of this exhibit. I downloaded a separate copy of these rules, apparently. It looks like that the legislature certified approval by default on July 11th, 2024. Does that sound right to you?
Yes.
The reason I point out that date is that do you know when the bids were due in this procurement for the airport IFE?
No, I do not.
So you don't know whether it's before or after?
No, sir, I do not.
Okay, so if it had been before July 11, 2024, would these new rules apply to the people that were licensed under that procurement or to that procurement specifically?
When these rules are applied, that's when the effective date is applied, is which it takes place. Once it's adopted, then it's an effect. But I don't know exactly the dates that I can look back.
Okay, so if the rules weren't in effect, say in June of 2024, you wouldn't expect anybody to comply with those rules, would you?
With the old rules, you have to comply with the old rules. The rules that was in effect, the old rules, that's what we were going with. Okay. And that's, we have to follow that. Until this was adopted, then we follow the new rules.
Okay, this might make it a little clearer. So this IFB was issued by the airport on May 22nd, 2024. Okay. Which rules were in effect at that point?
I have to read it, but I don't know right now, sir.
So if the new rules were certified in July 2024, and the IFB came out in May 2024. The new rules wouldn't apply in May 2024, would they?
How we operated our offices when this was adopted, we followed the new rules and reg.
Okay.
So outside of our office, what other entities, what dates they're looking at, and what date closes, we don't really track that. We just go with our office and how we go into the new rules of May.
Okay. So in May of 2024, what rules were you enforcing?
If it was still in the old one, then we're practicing the old ones.
Okay. Mr. Brennan identified three different sets of rules, one under Chapter 25 of the GAR, one under Chapter 29 of the GAR. And another set of rules that was posted on the CLB's website. Now, which one of those sets of rules were you enforcing in May 2024?
We were following the old rules and reg.
Which ones?
I'm not looking at the what you're identifying. We're going off of what I have in our office and what I have to look back and see what was posted. That's the issues that we had, and that's what we cleared up. If you go back today, we have all that fixed.
So now it's fixed because we got the new rules.
Yeah, I don't know really exactly all the deficiencies that were out there. We just know that we have to fix some stuff. Today we're practicing with the new rules and reg because it's adopted and nothing else.
And I'm not blaming you for this, but before these new rules were adopted, would you admit that there was some confusion about which rules should be applied?
I'm not confused. We were following the old rules and reg.
Sure. And which ones are those?
What we had publicized, I think it was GAR 29.
What about GAR 25? Is that one was also codified?
I can't speak to that.
What about the copy that you were shown that was shown on the CLB's website? Were you enforcing those ones as well?
We're following the old rules and regs, that's all.
Which one is the old rules and regs?
29.
To get that, sorry, just want to return an objection. I think part of the witness's difficulty is we don't know the differences between, right? And so I'm sorry for interrupting. Sure. I'll just note that for the record.
Okay. Can we see the 25 GAR? I think it's exhibit C. Just the first page. You can zoom in just to see the first two sections. And you could go and read each individual section, just the table of contents. So now, could you read the first section up there? 12, it's a heading for the first section, 12.101. Authority and purpose of regulations, exceptions, enforcement. Right. I guess that's what it says. The second section is 12.102, and that says definitions.
Can I read it?
Sure. Do you want to?
No. But That's what you're asking.
Okay. So if we just go to the top again. And I'd just like to compare that with Exhibit G, at least the first two sections of those regulations.
I'm going to show the
give it show the for you. The numbers are different, obviously. The first section is the same. The definitions is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 separate sections now instead of the second section. Again. So at least we've established here that the order of these sections was at least a little different between these two rules, right? I mean, we could go in and read them individually and compare them all one by one.
Yeah, you're going to have to say yes and no to the microphone. So okay. We have it on there.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
So these rules are at least a little different, right?
Yes.
So which ones were you applying at the time?
I know we were applying the new rules and reg when it became in effect. Before then, we were applying the old rules and reg, and that's what we were following.
So was it 25 or 29 that you consider the old rules and regulations?
Twenty-five is the old.
So 25 were the ones that were in effect in May 2023.
My understanding.
You sure it's not 29?
That's all.
Yeah. So 25 then?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure.
We were following the old rules and reg.
Which one though?
I don't know the number exactly.
I think I made my point. Let's see. So Mr. Brennan, I think he asked you to go through the process in which Safe Highway would go on to the CLB and try to get a C license.
Yes.
Doing the procedures that you would go, that I would have to go through in order to obtain a C license.
Yes.
Okay. Now, again, I'm going to put this back at least in context of time. Since this CLB was, since this IFB was issued in May 2024, if I wanted to try to apply for a license between May 2024 and July 2024, how long would it have taken me to get a C license?
Like the same, like I said, if you fill out your application, came in, got interviews, and were scheduled in 2 weeks, and you were successful in passing your exams, you could come in and get licensed maybe in 2 weeks, as short as 2 weeks.
You know, with respect to that period of time, was there anything going on that was diverting any labor or attention from the CLB to other things other than testing all the time?
We have our work, different work that we do aside from just licensing, but I don't see any real issues preventing anybody to get an opportunity to take an exam, interviewed and exam tested in a timely manner.
So there's nothing going on in the summer of 2024 that would delay or pause testing.
If you're referring to COVID, then that's.
I'm not referring to COVID. I'm just asking if there's anything during the summer.
I couldn't tell you aside from what we were doing out of work. Nothing stands out that it was really. If you're referring to the old rules and reg not being approved on 68, we were still getting people licensed that were not specialties.
Okay. So if we could go to Exhibit D. Page 25, section 1422. and subsection A. So this is at least 29 GAR, Article 4, Section 1422, which is scope of classifications, general engineering, general building specialty contractors. And to me, it looks like it's the general engineering contractor definition under the statute. Would you agree with that?
That was a C68.
This is a C68 license.
Can you go down?
Sure.
No, up.
I'm not referring to the C68 license. I'm referring to section 1422.
Okay. So what is your question?
Is that the definition of a general engineering contract?
Based on what it's saying, yes.
A general engineering contract is also known as an A license. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, have you had a chance to read that definition?
I went over it briefly, yes.
Does that authorize general engineering contractors to work on airports and airways?
My understanding is a general contractor will build a house, for example, a building, for example.
Wouldn't that be a general building contractor, which would be B, if you'd scroll down, please? Would you agree that homes, those types of things would be under general building contractor?
Yes.
That's a B license, right?
Yes.
If we go back to A, sorry, section A. But halfway through, there's a line that starts with tunnels. Do you see that line?
No. There.
Does it say airports and airways there?
It says airports and airways.
Okay. So what is that doing in this definition for A license holders?
I will let Ms. Nita answer that. She's probably more of a subject matter expert when it comes to this.
Okay. But you see all those other things that are in here. Irrigation, drainage, water power, water supply, flood, central, harbors, docks, overpasses. Are those things that would require somebody to be able to use concrete in order to build those things?
I'll let Ms. Nita answer that question.
I'm just asking you, does it sound like concrete would be used in building those things?
I would think that there are some concretes involved in this construction.
What about reinforcing steel?
If it requires, yes.
How about structural steel?
Perhaps.
How about welding?
There will be some welding in there, yes.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
We are allowed to. Send the objection to having.
We'll register standing objection to Surface Solutions participating.
I have no objections to this.
Let me just hear what you're going to start with, and then let's see if you can.
I just wanted to clarify on the A license and what exactly it kind of following up on what Craig Johnson's asking about. And clarification on that, there's a lot of reference to the old rules. I know there's been some clarification, but there were four rules that were presented, three of them could potentially be the old rules.
You object.
We do. They did not protest at the agency level, so our argument would be there's no jurisdiction over their claims.
I mean, the appearance is an interested party. In all past hearings, at least interested parties would be able to participate.
I'll allow you to ask a couple, let's see, until you get to
out. Okay. And yeah, I'll probably be quick for a little. Attorney Brendan asked you to kind of go through the testing requirements to get A license, B license, and C license. Can you confirm that an A license holder, there's a specific test for that?
Yes.
And a B license holder, there's a specific test for a B license holder?
Yes.
Could you, actually the page that you were just on, could you go back to Exhibit B, page 10? D is in Delta. Page 10, it would be section 1421. And again, to the extent you can answer this, sorry.
All right.
So here it talks about a license, general engineering contractor, and some of the things that someone with that license holds. And the first item there is asphalt, paving, and surfacing. You see that?
Yes.
So this, is it your understanding that someone who has a general engineering contractor license, an A license, is authorized to perform work involving asphalt, paving, and surfacing?
Objection. That's for legal conclusion.
He's the regulatory agency and the director of CLB, so this whole case rests on their opinion as to whether or not.
Go ahead.
The question again?
Is it your understanding that if someone is a general engineering contractor, they are authorized to perform work for asphalt paving and surfacing, which is the first item?
Yes.
Can you scroll down two pages, please? Okay. Now, these are the specialty contractors, which you guys refer to as C licenses. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you see the second end there is asphalt, paving, and surfacing.
Yes.
So is an A license holder required to take an A license and a C license, or is the A license enough for them to perform that work?
So if the work is more than 35% of the contract, they need a specialty license. If the work that is less than 35% of the contract and is almost, for example, they're building a house, there's some asphalt work that needs to be done, but it's probably 1% of the work, they do it. But if more than 35% of the work is done, it requires you to have a specialty license.
And that is all basically contract to contract. It's a determination made project by project. So what you're saying is it's possible for a general contractor to do asphalt and paving as long as it's less than 35% of the total work for that project. Is that correct?
Yes. For example, you can build a house and there's some plumbing in it. So they do the plumbing, yes. But if it's just plumbing, a plumber, the individual has to be licensed as a plumber to do that, just to be a plumber.
And if it is less than 35% of that project, someone with a general contracting license, the A license, would not need to take a specialty license. Yeah.
Yes.
Could you, I just want to draw Exhibit B. Could you load that? And again, I'm sorry, this is just to confirm. So this version of the rules, my understanding, was available on the Contractors Licensing Board website. Your testimony today is that the Contractors Licensing Board never actually followed or applied these rules. Is that correct?
That's not what I said.
Okay. I guess so. This is what I need to kind of work through. Can you, next page, please? So we've referenced now the Title 25 GAR and then the Title 29 GAR and now these. So in May of 2024, were you applying these rules or were you applying the GAR?
my instructions in my office that we follow the old rules and reg until the new rules and regs were adopted. I don't know the dates exactly, but that's the instructions.
And Attorney Brennan used this word codified. To your knowledge, were these rules ever codified?
I can't answer to that, honestly.
Okay. So if you scroll down to the bottom of that page, and now I need reading glasses. Can you really scroll in and scroll down to the bottom? There's a reference there. You see where it says REVS? Can you see it? You can enlarge it a little bit larger. It looks like it says, scroll down a little bit. Rev 5, 2009.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Looking at that, would it appear that these rules were somehow drafted in 2000, in May of 2009?
That's my understanding.
And I just, again, following up from prior, so the old rules, are these the old rules, or is it the GAR that you were?
This is the old rules. Since 2009, those are the old rules.
So you were applying these rules to licensing?
We were applying the old rules until the new rules were adopted.
And that's where, I understand.
I understand the confusion. There's a lot of confusion. Believe me, there was a lot of confusion coming into CLB. And that's why I was happy that I came in when the OPA went through our, and obviously this problem wasn't, it's been there. It's just us fixing it just now. So, excuse me that I'm kind of, but there's just a lot of confusion with what was out there. And now I think we're in the right page now, as far as CLB, hopefully.
Just to make this simple, I'm gonna, if you could go to Exhibit C, page 26. Is that page 20? It's the next page, please. Okay, I'm gonna. Can you mark number four? Back up. Number subsection four. 1217 subsection four. There you go. Can you enlarge there? Now I'm just going to, Mr. Allen, I really broke out for you just to try. Any person who qualified a written examination after the effective date of these rules for a contractor's license and the general engineering contractor classification shall automatically be deemed to hold or be qualified for a license in the specialties listed under section 12106A. You see that?
Yes.
Now, we were just looking at section 12106A. Can you scroll up to that section? So, it would be page 9. Do you see 12106 subsection A basically lists the entire category of classifications?
Objection. This was raised in the briefing. A does not list A1, yes.
Well, I think A1 would fall under A, but Mr. Ogan, you can see how that is accurate. Is that accurate? That 12, can you scroll up a little bit? I apologize. 12106 subsection A basically is the opening, and then everything, all the classifications fall under subsection A. Is that accurate?
That's what it says there. Yeah.
Now, the reason why I ask you this is now going back to subsection to Exhibit B. If you go to section 7.2, page 20. Any person, subsection B, any person who qualified by written examination after the effective date of these rules for a contractor's license and general engineering contractor shall automatically be deemed to hold or be qualified for specialties listed under part 6.1 list A. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we go up to list A, what I will represent to you, and you can kind of verify there, 6.1 subsection A limits it to those that listing under general engineering contracting. So I will. Is that accurate?
That's what I'm looking at.
Okay. So the GAR, whether you didn't draft that, but it looks like it was poorly crafted to include all the classifications. Is that correct?
I can't explain
the poorly reason. Crafted is the difficult part.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when you look at this, is it clear what a general engineering contractor is licensed to do under subsection 6A?
I think the best one to explain that would be Ms. Lita.
I don't have any other questions.
Can I just say, I'll ask a question, then you can follow what COVID quotes with him. Go back to the April 21st letter. Is that E? Several times when you were testifying, you said when it became effective.
Yes, sir.
What date do you mean by effective date? In your letter, go down a little bit. You signed on the contractor's license board signed. Approved on a certain date.
4 or 5.
Yeah.
Your Honor, I had our secretary get a phone call from the legislature, and they gave us an exact date that it was effective. I don't recall that exact date, but we were, I was really, because I know all the issues, we went down to the exact date that it was effective. I don't know right off hand, but that came
it
from...
It could not have been before
no,
April the 11th.
No, Your Honor.
It would have to be sometime after April 11th was the effective date.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So it wasn't the date that your board approved it?
No, Your Honor. No.
The effective date, you understand it, was when the date that the legislature gave you...
Adopted it. Yes.
And if that date is July 24th, 2024,
it'll be
that would be that date.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so anything IFRB filed between May of 24 and closed by June of 2024, you would have been using
the new
rule. Yes. I mean, no. Between May and June.
Yes.
You would have been using rules that became effective in July?
No. After this was approved by the legislature, we will use the new, this.
So you used it after July 24th, 2024?
Yes, Your Honor.
But June of 2024 is before that
date. We were still tracking the old rules and regs.
And is it my understanding that you were applying GAR 25, though something else was on your website.
Yes, Your Honor. We were practicing. I don't know exactly what was on our website. I know we had an issue that we fixed. Just going off my memory, there was an issue. But we were practicing the old rules and reg until the new rules and reg was adopted. What was on the publicized, I don't exactly know. I know there was a problem there. So we fixed it.
But you are aware, no, but before you fixed it in mid 2024, you are aware that something was posted on the website, which the public was depending on, and you were using GAR 25 because that was the practice in the office.
I don't know if it was the GAR 25 that was published, sir, in the website. I don't know if it was the old rules and reg that was published. I don't know what was published. If they say if it was not the GAR 25, I don't know what was published. To my.
Okay. I'll let you try to clear it up.
Yeah, Mr. Reagan, so I just want to make clear. They've all, everybody, including myself, has asked you about the three conflicting rules. We'll call them the conflicting rules, exhibits B, C, and D. Okay. So we have 29 GAR, right? 25 GAR, and then the blue graphic that was on the CLB's website, the one that starts with the blue title page, right? Those are the three we're talking about.
Right.
You don't actually know that there's a difference in any of those three documents, right? Today.
I know we have a difference between the 25 and the 29.
Correct, but that's what I'm saying. Specifically as to what may be an issue in this case.
You haven't
done a deep dive into this.
No.
Do the A licenses match the B license? You haven't done that.
I have not done that.
But the documents can speak for themselves, right?
Yes, sir.
That's fair.
Yes.
Okay. Could I ask, we go to the procurement record, Exhibit A, at page 1383. So I want to kind of give context to what you're saying earlier. You recall Attorney Camacho's questioning about 35%?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you some questions about, as soon as we can get Exhibit A, page 1383.
Sorry,
it's also bait stamps, but I prefer not to use the binders, but they're kind of cumbersome.
It's a large file.
Sorry. Let's go down.
What page?
1383. Okay, so, sir, may I ask you, do you recognize what this document is?
Yes.
What is it?
It's a license that we issue out to individuals that are licensed and with CLB.
So this is pretty consistent with the form contractor's license that the contractor's license board does issue?
Yes, sir.
So, for example, do you recognize your signature on this document?
Yes, sir.
I'll just represent to you, it's in front of you, but this is a contractor's license from Cortec International Corporation.
Yes, sir.
So I see there that Cortec appears to have license in the following classifications, A and B, correct?
A and B, yes.
And then from C to C68, almost every single subsection, there may be a few missing, but almost every single one, right?
Yes.
So based on your earlier testimony, Cortec had to take the A test?
Yes, sir.
Their RME had to take the A test?
Yes, sir.
They had to take the B test?
Yes, sir.
Their RME had to take the B test?
Yes, sir.
And all the way from C1 through C58, if I can see correctly.
50. Yes, sir.
Okay, so the CLB actually issues A and B license holders C designations if they request it, right?
Say that again, sir.
The CLB actually issues A and B license holders C subspecialty licenses if they apply for it, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that includes subspecialties that may be included on the list both Mr. Johnson and Mr. Camacho were questioning you about. You'll recall asphalt and paving.
Yes, sir.
So that license could be issued to Cortec if they request it.
Yes, sir.
And that's because there may be projects where 35% or more of the work could involve a subspecialty and an A license would not cover it.
Exactly.
Okay. And isn't it true that just because you're a general engineering contractor, you can't advertise in any of the subspecialties, right?
Not if you don't have, if you just have the general, then yes, you're right.
Yep. And you cannot just do work in just that subspecialty without a specific C level license.
Yes, sir.
And if you're a general building contractor, you also cannot classify, you cannot advertise or perform work that requires a C license only, unless it's one, less than 35%, correct?
Right.
Or two, they have that subspecialty license.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Public Auditor, just as a matter of housekeeping, I've conferred with PFM's counsel. We, the airport, will stipulate that the new rules became effective July 11, 2024. We don't have any objections.
The letter itself, too, says that it becomes effective 90 days from the date they were received by the legislature, and that letter was received by April 24.
So, yeah, we're fine with that. So I just want to clarify a question, a line of questioning. So the question put to you was, in 2024 May, what rules were you enforcing? Do you recall that line of questioning?
Yes, sir.
And you said the old rules, whatever they were, I think is the best summary, right?
Yes.
But today, if a contractor is performing, they only have to comply with the new rules.
For it. Yes,
you would not, regardless of when, let's say, an IFB was issued, you would not go back and enforce the old rules on a project that is ongoing or that starts after today.
That is true, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ogun. That's it for my second round.
I just got a couple more questions. Okay. We could go to exhibit C. Sorry, T. Page 12. No, this is good. This is good right here. So this is 29 GAR Article 4, Section 1421 A3, is my understanding, with respect to specialty contractors. So it says 35% there, right, in that paragraph? In what context is that 35%? Let me just ask a leading question. So this section says that a specialty contractor can perform work in a separate subspecialty if that work is less than 35% and supplemental to the performance of the work in the craft to which that specialty contractor is licensed, right? So that 35% amount for extra contractual work applies specifically to specialty contractors, right? At least under this section.
They can do the work if it's 35% or less of the actual project that they are licensed to do.
As a specialty contractor.
They're doing the work. It's a specialty license. If it's less than 35%, because it's involving the license that they were. For example, they're building a home, they require some electrical work to be done. It's less than 35% of the whole work, so they do the electrical, even though they may not have an electrical license. That's the best way I can explain it.
That makes sense to me, though. But this section 3 applies specifically to specialty contractors, right?
Okay.
So if we were to move up to the section that applies to general engineering contractors, A license holders. It says more than two unrelated heavy construction trades or crafts, including not limited to the following. Nothing here says 35%, does it?
I don't see it.
Okay. But again, we're going looking at this list of different trades and crafts that is listed under general engineering contract. To me, it looks like it includes a lot of the C license subclassifications. Would you agree with that?
I see some, yes.
So it includes cement, concrete, at least on this list. It includes reinforcing steel in this list. Is that right?
It says right there.
Yeah. Why is this list of trades and crafts listed under the definition, or at least the section relating to general engineering contractors, if they're not allowed to do these trades and crafts?
I'll leave that question to Ms. Nita to answer.
So you don't understand why?
I won't explain it. She's just me when it comes to this.
Okay, so
I don't want to. I'm she's the subject matter expert.
You wouldn't be the subject matter expert on this.
I am not the subject matter expert. She's been there over 20 years.
Okay. Now, going back to, I'm done with this exhibit at least for now. Going back to testing, at least, I think something was pointed out to me with respect to when testing is done, it could take 2 weeks for a specialty license, for you to get a specialty license, specifically a C license, right?
When I came into CLB, no specialty licenses were being issued at that time.
When was that?
I was there more than about a year and a half. There are some issues with the C68, so they stopped issuing C68s.
Okay. When did you start working at the CLB?
2023, November.
November 2023. When did the CLB start issuing licenses, C licenses?
Objections. C68.
Just C68,
not all C licenses.
Yes.
Also, it was issuing other C licenses.
Yes, C68s.
So C68 only were the ones that you were not issuing.
Yes.
Okay. Is somebody able to take multiple C licenses exams in one sitting?
Yes.
How many, up to how many can you take in one sitting?
I have to refer to the, I understand it that we've, some individuals came in and took two tests in one day.
Okay. Can you take two more tests the next day if you're applying for multiple licenses?
We don't have a schedule like that. We test twice a month.
Okay, so if I wanted 10 licenses, then it'd take me at least 2.5 months, then the test for 2.5 licenses. Sorry, 2.5 months to test for 10 licenses.
I mean, that's if the schedules permit, perhaps.
That'd be an ideal scenario.
I don't say it's ideal. Most people come in and get one or two licenses. That's it.
Say if I wanted to apply for, say if there's a contract coming up with the government, I needed, say, 5 licenses. Would I be able to get those 5 licenses in 2 weeks?
Highly unlikely.
Why is that?
This is just the scheduling. You're talking about the scheduling conflicts. We test only twice. Everybody will have, there's a list, and you know, we don't, one person's gonna, we give everybody opportunity to get license. A lot of these people that have multiple licenses have done it over a course of years.
So if I wanted to have all the licenses that maybe CoreTech had, 1 through 58, C1 through 58, I couldn't do that in 2 weeks, could I?
I'm not going to say they can't do it. I'm not going to say they could do it. I'm saying most of the people with more than one license have done it over a course of time.
I don't have any additional questions.
No other question.
Thank you. If you're excused.
Thank you, Mr. Appreciate it.
Who's your next witness?
Mr. Public Auditor, We're going to call Mr. Nuncio Franco, who I believe is downstairs. Could we take a short break while... Oh, Mr. Nuncio Franco is here.
Please raise your right hand. Can you state your full name?
My name is Roger Aspogras, Nuncio Franco.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Good afternoon, Mr. Nuncio Franco. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Sir, may I just ask, have you ever testified in an administrative hearing or court proceeding before?
This is my first time.
Okay, so may I just kind of give you some ground rules? You're being recorded, so please make sure that you speak into the microphone in front of you. Pull it closer. I notice you're a little bit soft-spoken. So just no nodding your head for answers, if that's okay. You understand?
Okay.
Okay. Sir, may I ask, where do you work currently?
I work with Ivana Lisa Acabado Engineers. ENA Engineers.
Yeah, I was about to ask. So ENA Engineers, or not engineering, I just want to make sure I get it.
Not engineering.
Okay, so ENA Engineers. And are you an engineer?
Yes.
Okay, what type of engineer are you?
I'm a civil.
Civil engineer? Yes. Do you hold a license from the Guam Appeals Board?
Yes, I do.
Do you hold any other licenses as an engineer?
No.
Have you passed any examinations as an engineer that would... add to your qualifications in civil engineering?
Just that license for the civil engineering.
Okay. And is that the license that gives you the PE after your name?
Correct.
And what does that stand for?
Professional engineer.
Professional engineer. Now, in that capacity, let me ask you the type of work you do. Have you ever done construction management on a large capital construction project?
Yes, I've done some at some capacity with perhaps the previous project, the GIAA, I was a part of that.
Okay, so you've done construction management.
Yes.
Have you also been involved in it, not limited to GIAA, have you also been involved in design work on behalf of as a third party engineer for a customer?
Yes, I've done some design work.
And I'm just going to try to get you out of here. I know you're very busy, but if I were to refer to the terminal roof replacement project, would that familiarize you with what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Was ENA involved in any way in the design work for that IFB?
Yes, ENA was one of the designers of record.
Okay, and so as the designer, you helped develop what are called technical specifications to be included by the airport in a procurement. Is that fair?
That is correct.
Okay, so if I were to show you the technical specifications, would you recognize them?
Yes.
May I ask staff to bring up the procurement record exhibit A at page 226? So I'll represent to you, sir, that this is a cover. I'll move to the next page, 227. Try it again. It might be frozen. Is it frozen? Sorry about that. And 228. All right. So do you recognize it? It looks like this is sort of a table of contents.
Correct.
Would these be the specifications you contributed to if you're just reading the subject matter?
Yes, I contributed to what's shown there.
So the design work for this terminal building replacement and a renewable energy system phase one. I'm reading from the top of that document.
Correct.
Okay. So for this design, I'm going to ask you just generally, I really don't want to get into the details because I would not understand. So I thank you so much for being here. But so for this project, as I understand it, this is work that's going to be done on the terminal building at the airport.
Correct.
And when I say terminal building, just so everyone can understand, That's the building that comprises, you know, the baggage claim on the bottom, the ticketing counters on the second, and the departure corridor and customs and immigration lounge. That's the terminal building, right?
That's the terminal building.
Okay, so for the terminal building, this is a building that is anticipated to be in operation during construction. Is that fair?
Yes.
So does that, you know, increase the complexity of the design work that goes into this project, taking into account this is a building that's, you know, used by a large amount of people and it'll be in use during the project?
Yes, there would be some complexity.
And it would add some technical features to this design.
Yes.
Because as the project is being completed, you're going to have to monitor all the different moving components, right?
Potentially.
HVAC.
Potentially.
Plumbing.
Potentially.
Electrical.
Potentially.
So it's been raised in this procurement setting, in one of the briefs, that this construction work doesn't involve any HVAC until the end. That's normally how it works. That wouldn't be the case for this procurement. I mean, for this design and project, right?
This project is broken down into two phases. Where the first phase involves plumbing, where plumbing is not only the roof, they have to be downstairs, you know, making sure that the pipes down there work. You can start up with going to the cleanouts and you know, sweeping the pipes, making sure, you know, to check that.
I'm not even getting that complicated.
And if the pipe is damaged, then you'll perhaps have to go in there and replace the pipe.
I'm not even getting that complicated. I just mean, you know, for example, in the airport, some of the cooling units and other HVAC components are located on the roof of the terminal building.
Yes.
Where some of this construction work is going to occur.
You have the roof, and then you have the items underneath, and then you have the plumbing running underneath that.
Yeah, so it's fair to say somebody would have to be familiar with all of those types of, types of work, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, because the terminal building has all of that throughout.
Perhaps.
Okay, and I understand as part of this design work, you helped to identify certain qualifications that the successful offeror should have. Is that correct?
Actually, those are in the master specifications, what those qualifications are.
Yeah, actually, we can go to the next.
It's like industry standard, you see.
Yeah, I noticed you included those. So if I were to bring up the list, would that help you? If we could go to page, are we on 229, 230? Is this what you're referring to?
That is still the table of contents.
Okay, we'll just keep going down because I do believe it should be in this list if you're referring to the industry standards, right? That's what you said?
Actually, the whole specifications would be, you know, like industry standards. That's okay. Like a standard, a master specification if you want.
Okay.
Where you would take out portions of what's needed for this particular project.
Understood. I see what you're saying. So your specifications were pulled from a greater industry standard manual.
Correct.
Okay, and that's how you developed for the airport and designed this project.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in that capacity, did you assist the airport in identifying specifically long contractors, license board, licenses that may be relevant to a successful offer?
We were tasked to do that, where up front you said you do not know what the license requirements are.
Yeah, and then what was the... if you recall, what did you suggest to the airport after you identified, you know, the certain licenses from the list of contractors' licenses?
I said that it seems that these may be the ones listed because they gave us the list of, you know, what's there. And, you know, these were like tied into the scope of work, not tied into the specifications that we had prepared.
So I guess what I'm understanding is it was you know, you didn't just sort of throw all the licenses on the wall and whatever stuff. You went through and you said this may be appropriate.
Maybe,
this
yes.
may appropriate.
And that's
okay.
Just the, you know, please check this with the contractor's license.
You asked the airport, check with the contractor's license, correct? Yes. Okay, and that was what you did. So you pulled from the master manual specifications.
Yes. Basically what the qualifications are.
Yeah.
You know, so instead of having a thicker booklet to bring to a contractor's licensing board, I bridged it. I took out, you know, just qualifications, you know, here and there.
And I'm not going to, you know, ask you to remember the exact list, but for example, You said there was plumbing relevant, there was electrical relevant, and HVAC. Those would have been licenses you flagged as potentially appropriate.
Yes.
Okay. No further questions for Mr. Nashbrenko.
So just out of curiosity, Mr. Nashbrenko. My name is Mars Johnson. I represent PFM. I'm one of the attorneys. I just have a few questions for you. Plumbing, electrical, and HVAC. You said these are parts of this project, right?
Right.
I have to admit, I'm not familiar necessarily with how to put together these plans or construction management, but is there a percentage of the total project that you would say relates to plumbing?
I couldn't say. That could be means and methods of contractor. Some contractors can do things at one field faster than another. I don't know percentages.
So there's no standard that was set in the specifications?
There's no last standard, but I...
Same thing could be said for electrical and the same thing for HVAC?
Yes.
There was one thing that I was curious that you said about the way that you decided sort of what specialties might be needed to accomplish this job. Did you made the determination of what absolutely was needed?
No, not absolutely. Right off the bat, I was up front. I did not know what the contractor's licenses are. I pulled out qualifications to do the work, and it's how that equates to a contractor's license. I do not know.
So you're not the expert when it comes to which licenses are required to do this.
Correct. Work. I'm not an expert at all.
Thank you. No questions.
Okay,
you're excused. Are we allowed to ask just one question? I know this is not an objection.
Where do you see
it? Okay. Is there any requirement that you develop the technical specs that licensing would have been required when bids were submitted?
No.
That's all that I think.
Thank you, Mr. Nishman. Sorry to take out your day. Good day.
Your next word is
Ms. Baison will be our final. We could excuse the fourth. I was satisfied with Mr. Huggin.
Okay.
Standing. Please raise your right hand. Please state your full name.
Katrina O. Baison.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
I know you didn't want to have a hearing, but he's going to be excusing
Ms.
Bailey. Any objection?
No objection.
You're part of Ms. Bailey. Okay.
Good afternoon, Ms. Baison. So I've met you before, and we work closely as the Airports Council, but I actually want to kind of introduce who you are, because this would be your first hearing with the airport. What position do you hold at the Guam International Airport Authority?
I'm the Supply Management Administrator.
Okay, and to be clear, that position was vacant before you took it for over a year.
Correct.
The supply management administrator at the airport is the section head for the airport's procurement division.
Yes.
Which falls under administration.
Yes.
Okay. Administration. So just to give the parties and the public auditor just where you're at in the totem pole. So if you're at the top of procurement, how many personnel do you supervise? The whole procurement section?
Yes.
And how many employees is that?
There's a total of 7 that I supervise.
So 7 plus you, 8 in the airport's procurement. Just as an aside, the airport, through the infrastructure law and COVID relief, has moved several tens of millions of dollars of projects in the last, I'd say, 2.5 years. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
And when did you start at the airport?
I started November 2023.
So in November 2023, and since then, the administration of certain contracts and the procurements federally funded have really fallen into your lap.
Correct.
So above you is the airport services manager.
Yes.
And that's a division head. The airport's within a division.
Yes.
And then there's a deputy executive manager and executive manager.
Correct.
And then obviously the board of directors.
Yes.
Okay. As the supply management administrator,
you went inside a little closer to make sure that the same people.
Yeah. So you had to have some experience to take that supervisory position at the airport, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any other experience in government of Guam procurement?
Yes. So I started in 2010 with DOE as a buyer win, 2010 to 2011. Then I moved to another division in special education. And then in 2015, I went back to procurement as a buyer supervisor too, from 2015 to 2022.
And just at DOE in that 2010 to 11 and then 15 to 2022, I just want to kind of give a baseline. You've done procurements that are RFPs and IFPs, correct?
Correct.
So you're, for example, well, let's step back. Have you attended the modules and have the certificate from the Guam Community College?
Yes.
So, you know, you have experience and training in specific Guam procurement law.
Correct.
At GDOE, did you handle federally funded procurement?
I did. Yes.
And then you handled locally funded as well?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So off the top of your head, do you recall any or maybe the largest you handled?
Simon Sanchez RFP for the design is one of them. And then there's also the food service management contract.
Okay. And that's the Basel food, that one?
I think it was
Have you appeared
it's
before
the current vendor right now?
Have you appeared before the public auditor before?
I was subpoenaed one time, but it was dismissed before then.
Okay, I apologize. I didn't ask. You've never testified before.
No.
Oh, okay. So sorry, same ground rules. You've sat here, you know.
Okay.
You're doing great so far. But let me just ask though, because it is relevant in our view. Is there a difference between working for GDOE, a line agency, and GIA, an autonomous agency, in terms of procurement and the steps you have to take?
Yes, there's some differences.
Okay, I'd like to highlight one if I can and make sure I understand it. So GDOE uses local funds in a lot of procurement.
Yes, local funds and some federal funds.
But when GDOE, I guess you could classify them as semi-autonomous because... Mm-hmm. You still had to interact at times with the Office of the Attorney General?
Correct. Yes.
And with the governor?
Yes.
Because when general funds are obligated, you know, the governor is a signatory, right?
Yes.
And is that sort of a difference from the procurements you've done at the airport?
Yes, the governor doesn't sign the...
Okay, and so at the airport, with this appeal, I wanted to touch base. If I call this, you've been sitting here, the terminal roof replacement, is that sufficient to let you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Terminal roof replacement, is that local funds?
That's AIP funding or federal funds.
So when we say AIP, that's Airport Improvement Program funding.
Correct.
And that's a grant program administered by the Federal Aviation Administration.
Yes.
And so, you know, AIP, there's more than one project.
Yes.
It's in fact, in any given year, there's between $10 and $100 million being spent by the FAA under the AIP.
Yes.
And grants are dispersed and competitive.
Yes.
And so, you know, just kind of as a matter of background, the airport has sort of two pathways for procurements, right? Because you have the local procurement law.
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. But also because it's federally funded, there are federal grant requirements on how bids are evaluated and what's supposed to be reported up, right?
Yes, that's amazing.
And that does, so not everything is handled by procurement in terms of, you know, AIP, you know, what needs to go to the FAA for approval.
Sorry, can you repeat?
Sure. So does procurement also handle the, I'm going to ask it a different way. Does procurement also handle that federal compliance and granting side to stay competitive?
No, we don't handle that.
Okay.
Part.
Good. So there's other divisions in the airport that are relevant or sections that may be relevant.
Yes. Correct.
So I want to talk about, first kind of, you know what this case is about. You know, there's a general, law contractor's license board issue, right?
Yes.
You've read all the papers?
Yeah. Yes.
To include PFM's protest?
Yes, I did.
So you know that, for example, part of the protest is requirement of contractor's license board licenses at the time of bid submission.
Yes.
Was that a requirement of this IFG?
Contractor's license?
Yes.
Yes.
And in fact, the airport listed specific contractor's license board licenses that needed to be provided with a bid.
Yes.
Was that requirement made in an addendum or was it in the initial IFB package?
It was in the initial IFB.
And that package was made public on the airport's website in May 2024?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember the specific date?
Not exactly, but it
the
sounds right.
Would the documents speak for themselves?
Yes.
Yeah, so if I were to give you a date, and I was in the ballpark, could you confirm that? So the date I have from the papers filed in this case, sorry. May 22, 2024, on around that time?
Yes.
So again, the contractor's license board requirements were in that document.
Correct.
And to your knowledge, that document made clear that they had to be provided by bid submission.
Correct.
Was the contractor's license board license requirement in the bid form with the initial IFB?
Was it in the bid form?
Correct.
No.
How about the bidder's qualifications?
It's in the special reminders.
Special reminder, it's your prospective offers. Great. Okay. Let me just ask you for comparison. What does GDOE do when contractors license board licenses are implicated in a construction project? When do they require licenses?
Upon submission also.
Of the bid?
Yes.
And would bids be rejected if they, by GDOE, to your knowledge and in your experience, they did not submit the appropriate licenses with the bid?
They would.
Okay. Is that what the airport has done, at least since you've come on board in November 2023 for construction projects?
If it wasn't in the submission and it couldn't produce it, then yes, it would be rejected.
Okay. Now, understood. Thank you for GDOE. I'm going to come back. Also, in this procurement package on bid submission, a contractor was required to submit a signed form contract.
Yes.
Is that a typical requirement in AIP-funded airport projects?
Yes.
And this is because there's not much variation in AIP-funded projects with the exception of the scope of work. Is that true?
Correct.
Yes. And that's because the FAA has specific contractual provisions that must be in a contract.
Yes.
To comply with the grant requirements.
Yes.
So in this procurement, once a bidder submits a signed form contract, if I could just walk through the process, what's the next step once the bids are received?
Once the bids are received?
Yes.
Then, we do the bid opening. Then once we do the bid opening, then we review it internally. So like procurement, along with like the division that requested for this procurement, we usually review the submissions to ensure that they meet the specifications that are required and they have all the forms required and the licenses required, whatever was required upon submission.
Okay. And if I suggested to you that the first week of July, July 5th, was the bid submission deadline, would that sound correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Did you receive, or were you there at the bid opening on that date?
Yes.
Could you identify the three bidders that submitted bids?
So PFM, Surface Solutions, and Cortec International.
Okay. On the date of bid submission in July, did any bidder raise that they protest that they were required to submit their contractor's license board licenses on that date?
No.
Was any protest formally lodged? You know what protest is?
Yes.
Under the procurement law?
Yes.
Was any protest lodged on that date?
Not on that date.
So you talked about the evaluation of bids, and I guess this is a good place to stop and just kind of step back. So I asked you earlier about the Attorney General's involvement in GDOE procurements.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall that question?
Yes.
So isn't it true that, at least since you started at the airport, the Office of the Attorney General does get involved with airport procurements in some instances?
Yes.
Do you know what the reason is for him to be involved?
Because we don't have a SAG.
And when you say SAG, you mean Special Assistant
yeah.
Attorney General?
So
okay, and so without a SAG, are you aware of when the Office of the Attorney General has to get involved?
Yeah, from the beginning until the end.
But is there a specific threshold for projects?
Oh, over 500,000.
At the time of procurement, if it's
so estimated. Yeah, so basically, whatever we estimate, if it's over 500,000, then that's when we have the agents involved.
Okay, and to be clear, was this terminal roof replacement? I mean, we've seen the bids. This one, the airport knew it would be over 500,000.
Yes.
Was the Office of the Attorney General involved in this procurement?
Yes.
Okay, how does the Office of the Attorney General assist the airport with procurements?
So they actually have a form. It has four phases in it. And for each phase, we have to provide a procurement record. So like for phase one is the planning phase, which is before publication, we would provide that to them and they would approve it or provide any changes that they want to provide. Then after that is before bid opening, I believe. And then that's the second phase. And then the third phase is after evaluation, but before award. And then the fourth phase is at award or upon award, or yeah, after award.
Okay. So let's be clear. When the IP was published in May 2024, had the airport gone to the Office of the Attorney General for any part of that?
Yes.
Or phase review, which phase?
Phase one.
And the Office of the Attorney General would have had to sign off on the planning and specification development phase.
Correct.
Okay. Just to be clear, I'm not asking about anything the Office of the Attorney General said to you or the airport specifically. Okay. I don't want to get into any new privilege, but so as far as you know, let's just say the procurement would not have been published if the specifications and phase one were not completed.
Correct.
Okay. And then you moved on to phase two. Did the airport submit phase two or submit this procurement to the Office of the Attorney General at phase two?
So we submitted phase two and three together.
And that would be bid opening and bid evaluation, but before award, phase two and three. And did the Attorney General allow or authorize, as far as you know, the airport to move on to phase, to the next phase?
Yes.
And that would be preparing the contract for signing?
Correct.
Okay. Eventually, this procurement itself was protested. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Again, you've read the papers, procurement records there. The protest had to do with a couple things, but I think a central point is GIA did something to PFM and Surface Solutions. Do you recall what that was?
We rejected their bids.
And do you recall why, if you could generally answer?
Yes, they didn't have the specific contractor's licenses that we required.
Okay, and you heard Mr. Nochefranca testify about the design work. Does that follow your recollection? Were you involved in the specification development here?
We reviewed the specifications.
But were you involved in ENA, providing the specifications to the airport and you turning them into that IFB?
Yes.
Okay, and so for example, did what he say about he identified contractors' licenses and then gave it to the airport, did that track?
Yes.
Do you remember anything about what the airport did with those qualifications and licensure requirements?
So we reviewed it and had our engineering section or division reviewed it as well.
And just to be clear, so what is GIA's engineering division?
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
So engineering to me, or do you have a bunch of PEs working in that division?
I can't say.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Well, let me just ask it a different way. When there are issues with construction, is that something you would go to engineering for the procurement manager?
Yes, usually.
So I think Mr. Uggen called them the SME, subject matter expert. Is that sort of the same construction?
Yes.
You rely on engineering division?
Yes.
So you're not just, procurement is not just arbitrarily making these requirements.
Oh, no.
It went through a process.
Correct.
Okay. When the GIA rejected PFM and Surface Solution bids, did you just make that decision unilaterally?
No.
Did you follow any type of process or do any type of verification?
Yes. So we actually also called the contractor's license board just to confirm that they, whether those particular bidders do or don't have those particular licenses.
And to be clear, did you just call or did you try anything else? Did the airport reach out agency to agency?
We also looked into the website because they usually publish the latest CLB listing of vendors. So we also looked there and we didn't see the licenses for those particular vendors or bidders and their subcontractors. So we decided to just call to be sure that the one in the website is up to date.
Okay, so you did, a couple layers of review. Did you write to the contractor's license board any formal letter?
No, we called and talked to the supervisor, Nita. And then after that, we sent an email, but
didn't
get a response.
Oh, so no follow-up response to your email correspondence? Okay. Just to be clear, is that... As the procurement manager, did you, take notes of this phone conversation?
Yes.
And did you make them a part of the procurement record?
Yes.
But can I ask just as a normative issue,
uh-huh.
Is that how you want to interact with the sister agency, just by a phone call? Is there something as a procurement manager, you think procurement could have done better here?
Yeah, I feel that, it could have been done more formally.
Okay.
But that would require both sides, right?
Well, you know, in the future, is that something that procurement is considering? Maybe a more formalized process to verify licensure if when necessary?
Yes.
Okay. May I ask you, if I were to pull up your notes from this phone call, would you recognize them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
May I ask the staff to pull up page 2097 of the procurement record? Okay, so there's a document with a, what looks like an airport letterhead and the date July 18th, 2024. Do you recognize that document?
Yes.
Are these in fact the notes that you took of your phone conversation or at least a summary of the phone conversation you had with the CLE?
Yes.
Okay, and these are the notes that you sent and have been a part of the procurement record since on or about that date?
Correct.
Okay, so may I ask you, I mean, you know, obviously the notes were taken close in time to the phone call, so you know, would you trust those notes as an accurate representation of what occurred on that phone call?
Yes.
Would you trust those notes over your testimony today, for example, because it's much closer in time?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, during any point in this call, did the CLB indicate that because, let's start with PFM, because PFM has an A&B license, they don't need the C subspecialty licenses that you were inquiring about?
No, they didn't.
Did they provide information to you that, hey, they don't have C, their T, but they, their license because they have an A license?
No.
Or B license?
No.
Same for Surface Solutions?
Correct.
Okay. And let me ask you about another page in the procurement record, page 1833. Okay. Actually, let's start so I can make sure you recognize the document. Can we start at 1831? Mr. Hernandez, sorry about that. Okay, so Ms. Basan, I've asked the staff to pull up a document. It looks like it may have frozen or it's still loading, but do you recognize this document?
Yes.
Is this part of a bid package submitted for this IFB?
Yes.
Whose bid package?
PFM.
Okay, and you know, it says there that it's licenses. Is this where they provided the licenses that were required by the IFB, as far as you can remember?
Yes.
If we can go to the next page. I think we may have missed one. Oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. The next page. So just for the record, we're on page 1834 of the procurement record. Do you recognize this contractor's license?
Yes.
Whose contractor's license is
this? Specific federal management.
And this is the license PFM submitted with its bid in July 2024?
Yes.
And the licenses that obviously they've indicated and that we know in the papers that they have are A and B?
Yes.
Okay, I want to go to the next page, 1835.
That's Mark 36.
I'm wondering if it...
No, 35. There, I see the thing going across.
Yeah. So we'll just go to the... So this is the RME license for Pacific Federal Mansion, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And separate from the actual contractor's license. So it identifies their responsible management authority for those two licenses.
Yes.
Okay. Can we go to the next page? This is PFM's, I understand it's one of their subcontractors?
Yes.
With several subspecialty C licenses?
Yes.
Okay, again, did the airport run through PFM's C licenses to make sure, to see if a C license was satisfied by a subcontractor?
Yes.
And they were still missing license classification?
Yes.
Can we go to the next page? So same thing, is this a second subcontractor?
Yes.
And same thing, even after, you know, looking at all three, two subcontractor and one contractor's license, there were still the ones missing that the airport noted in the record.
Yes.
And in its rejection under the PFM.
Yes.
Can we go to the next page? Same thing, the RME license for that subcontractor?
Yes.
Okay, next page. So one more page. Okay, Jim, can we go to 1833? I think the script might be really small, though, so I'm going to ask you to zoom on it. And I'm going to pull it up on my screen because I'm having trouble seeing this. Okay, so this was what came after the license title page. You recall that for PFM's bid?
Yes.
Okay. I ask you, could you read out how PFM prefaced the license submission to the airport on July 5th, 2024?
PFM hereby submits the following Guam contractors' licenses. Our team will obtain the remaining licenses upon contract award.
So as of July 5th, 2024, PFM, it appears, conceded there were some licenses that needed to be submitted.
That's what it seems, yes.
Okay, and again, this is not them saying our A and B licenses satisfy the missing licenses.
No.
Okay. Thank you for the exhibit. I'm okay with that for right now. I want to turn a little bit now to what happened. So the airport received a protest in this matter. It's in the record, August 29th, you recall that?
The protest?
Correct.
I don't recall the actual date.
Okay, understood. As of August, though, 2024, so bid evaluation is July 2024. The airport, I think you said, rejected PFM and Surface Solutions bids.
Yes.
For lack of certain licensure, right?
Correct.
The airport did that how? In writing, by email, by phone?
In writing, we have official bid statuses.
Okay.
A bid status that's sent to them and sent via email.
Okay. And the airport also issued a notice of award to a successful bidder, correct?
Yes.
And who was that?
Cortec Engineering.
And Cortec submitted proof of all licensure as with their bid?
Yes.
Okay, and again, I just want to highlight this because so there's no confusion. We talked earlier about there's a sort of federal grant arm wing that's operating, and then there's also the procurement arm, right?
Yes.
So someone who's familiar with the procurement law in Guam, for example, who's the contracting officer for the airport?
The contracting
officer? Yeah, like who has the procurement authority for the airport?
Oh, our executive manager?
Correct. But for federal grant purposes, who has the authority to make an award? Where does that have to go? Does that go just to the EM or the board?
It goes to the board, but I think it also goes to the FAA.
Correct. So the board has to approve an award.
Yes.
For grant funding to be awarded to the airport as well.
Yes.
So there are, you know, there's consequences to a notice of award, not just for procurement purposes, but also for grant purposes.
Yeah.
And I raise this because here, what happened when the protest came in from PFM? What did the airport do with this procurement?
We stayed it.
And why is that significant? When do you stay a procurement and when you receive a protest?
Before award.
And so no procurement award was made, correct?
Correct.
And I want to talk a little bit about that. I mean, what is the reason that an award was delayed in this procurement? We touched on it earlier.
Well, we did have to submit it to the AG review for phase four and final signature.
And so you have experience that since November 2023, there are procurements that are under 500,000 that don't have to go to the Office of the Attorney General.
Yes.
For those procurements, you use either the airport's engaged counsel, correct?
Correct.
So that could be my firm or where we have a conflict, one of the conflicts counsel that's on contract.
Yes.
When you use our firm or conflicts counsel, isn't it true that when there's a notice of award for federal purposes at the board, the airport's procurement follows pretty closely its award?
Yes.
Because local counsel, I mean, we're able to move, right?
Yeah.
So when the airport needs it. Has that been your experience with the Office of the Attorney General?
It depends. Sometimes it's fairly quickly. Sometimes it's like over a month.
So, for example, I remember one. It was a Thorn. One public project that the airport mm-hmm. procured in the last couple of years is the terminal floor replacement. Do you recall that project and procurement?
Yes.
So that has to do with all the flooring that was damaged from Typhoon Mawar.
Yes.
In fact, even you as a procurement manager, you know, everybody gets complaints about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so the airport wanted to expedite that procurement.
Yes.
How long did it take for the Office of the Attorney General to return a signed contract once it was submitted to their office, if you remember?
Well, for that, I think, I don't know the exact dates, but I know we received the signed contract September 2024. What is it? Yeah, before the end of the fiscal year, and it was published like in April.
And when did the airport board, if you recall, approve that contract award? And it's also...
That was end of May.
Yes. So from May to September. So really the airport has no control over when its board approves a notice of award. Mm-hmm. Remember, you got to answer.
Oh, yes.
And when the Office of the Attorney General will return a signed contract.
Yes, we have no
control. And let's be clear, right? September 2024, floor contract, the airport didn't get a contract that was redlined and said, make all these changes, right?
No, it was signed.
It took five, six months just to get a signature.
Yes.
Okay, and the airport couldn't move forward.
I'm sorry?
The airport couldn't move forward with that procurement.
Oh, no, yeah.
And isn't that a similar experience you're having on all large ticket procurements currently?
Yes.
To include the terminal roof replacement procurement.
So
this one was stayed, right, by protest?
Yes.
Other procurements from last summer are also still on hold at the Office of Attorney General, right?
Not right now.
Okay, but I just want to make clear though that the airport did an award here. It was said in the briefing that the airport made an award to Cortec, right? There was only a notice of award.
There's a notice
for
of
the
award,
grant
yes.
purpose, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when the airport uses AIP funds, isn't it true, at least in your experience, that there are specific timelines that the airport has to spend those funds?
Yes.
From when the grant is awarded?
Yes, there usually is, but I'm not quite.
Understood. But is that, for example, is that one of the inputs that the external to procurement parts of the airport would have on developing specs, for example, the time for completion?
Yes, they usually, management would inform me that it needs to be.
So like here, for example, when the airport's looking to award a contract for terminal roof replacement, this is only phase one.
Yes.
Phase two has to do with bringing the solar panels in and, you know, all of that jazz, yes. Right? So phase one, do you recall the time in this procurement?
When it needs to be awarded?
No. How long the performance for?
Long time. 700 some days, something like that.
No, I think you're correct. It's in the record, but I'll just represent to you it's 700 days and change, right? That is the performance period, not required by the airport per se, but by the FAA.
Yes.
And that's to comply with the grant that was awarded. And so did the airport build into that timeline when you put this into the term, how long it may take to get a CLB license if an offer doesn't have one?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. So in that 700 days, you heard the engineer, Mr. Nochefranca, a pretty complex project. Does the airport just have time for an indefinite delay while an offer goes and gets a license?
No.
And is that why this is a requirement at bid submission, so the airport knows who it's contracting with?
That's what, that's, I think so.
So, well, I just want to be clear, right? Okay. So the factors you're thinking about time, right? Mm-hmm. This is not just happening in a vacuum. We just want these licenses, period. There are other factors here that affect how the airport crafts these specifications and requirements.
Yes.
Now, may I just ask you, you were involved in this procurement from specification development through the protests in August 2024. Did you make any decision to include a requirement to, you know, be anti-competitive and only allow CoreTech to win?
No.
I mean, you're aware of the ethics and contracting chapter in the block procurement law?
Yeah.
Your obligations as the procurement manager? Yes. Would you violate that statute lightly?
No.
Okay. I do want to just, in the record, there was an allegation made in the papers that the design specifications were not, or the designer was not noted in the procurement record. Is this something that's included in the planning documents, identifying the designer?
Yes.
And also in any determinations the airport would have made?
Yes, it's in a determination.
Okay, if I were to show you those two documents, could you point out where ENA engineers was noted in the procurement record, just to rebut that allegation?
Okay.
Can we go to page 2329 of Exhibit 8?
Two, three, two, nine.
Yes, please.
I don't have that. It ends at 2328.
We'll try that one. It may just be mine. Should be the last page. 2329. Oh, it's just not a big E version. Can I approach? I just want to make sure there's maybe a page missing. Public order?
Please.
239, 2329 exhibit A. Yeah, this is what I'm looking for. Yeah. So that's 2328. Can we go to the base? Oh, it may just be. Oh, I don't know why. No. Yeah. So it looks like in the one submitted to the OPA, but maybe there's a software. But essentially, may I borrow this exhibit just so I can show council what I'm referring to, so that there's no confusion. It's just the last page. What's going on with the
computer?
Okay, so is this the document you were talking about that would reference the designer if there is a third party designer in the procurement file?
Oh, yes.
Okay, can we go to the bottom of that page, please, Mr. Hernandez? And again, so in that line 11, does the airport, in fact, in its procurement record, identify the third party designer?
Yes.
Okay. And then as far as the determination, could we go to 2322? And sorry, so this is a document that's in every procurement record, right?
Correct.
Yeah, this is a needed planning document. So again, I'll just represent that there was an allegation in the papers, Ms. Bason, that there was no determination as to a third-party designer. I want to bring up 2322 and ask you if you're familiar with that written determination. You see that document?
Yes.
And would this be the determination that does list whether there's a third-party designer?
Yes.
Okay, and does this determination made by the executive manager, the procurement officer for the airport, in fact, know that there was a third-party designer?
Yes.
Who contributed to the scope of services?
Yes.
And this document's a part of the procurement record in this case?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Public Auditor, I have no further questions for Ms. Bason. I'll send her to the next panel.
Okay. And we'll just take a quick break.
Sorry. No,
we're off the record at 2:59.
Yeah.
We're back on the record at 3:05. Yeah. 3:04. Yes.
Mr. Jones, I'm going to be a witness. Okay. You're a witness.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Basin.
Yes.
My name is Lars Johnson. I represent PFM. I just got a couple of questions for you. With respect to licensing, I believe you said that your role is to help put together the bid accurately.
Correct.
With respect to the technical requirements, is that your area of expertise?
The technical requirements meaning?
Let's say, for instance, what CLE licenses were required for this project.
I don't decide that. We usually consult with the engineering or the designer.
So the engineering or the designers would be the subject matter experts with respect to that?
Yes.
Not you.
No.
Now, if we could look to this Exhibit A, the procurement record, page 2096. While we're bringing that up, is there, with respect to pricing for procurement contracts, is there an estimate that's performed by the airport with respect to how much they might expect to pay?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what the estimate was? This?
It was about 29.
Is the estimate, that's not shared with the parties as part of procurement, is it?
Not in which one, or like here in this?
Well, it's not shared prior to bid opening.
Oh, no, no.
Why is that?
So that we have open competition.
So nobody's supposed to know what the estimate is, right?
No.
Look at this. I mean, this is the, do you know what this document is?
Yes, that's our bid opening abstract.
So this is the bid abstract?
Yes.
Does this document, at least on the far right column, show what, and this shows what each one of the three bidders bid on this project, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the total bid by each party is shown on the right column. Is that right, the far right column? And so Surface Solutions, if I'm correct, they bid $7,898,800, right?
Yes.
And Pacific Federal Management on line three, they bid $15,922,865.41. Is that correct?
Yes.
Cortec bid $20,068,296. Is that right?
Yes.
So Cortec's bid is roughly, I guess, about $4 million higher than PFM's?
Yes.
About $12 million higher than Surface Solutions?
Yes.
Surface Solutions, at least by numbers, would have been the lowest bidder.
Yes.
And again, how much was the estimate that was kept secret from the parties?
I don't know. I don't know the exact number, but it's about 20 million.
About 20 million? Yes. It's about within about 50,000 or so of the amount that Cortec bid?
I don't know the exact number.
Within $1 million of Cortec bid, at least.
Within the revenue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's see. Again, what is your position with the airport?
I'm the supply management initiative.
Does it at all concern you that the airport would be awarding this contract to the highest bidder who outbid the lowest bidder by almost three times the lowest bid?
Does it concern me?
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Why not?
Because we looked through everything and, you know, based on our review, you know, the other two bidders did not have all the required to make them responsive, at least in our eyes.
Because of the C license.
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Your Honor, if I may ask questions regarding her testimony with her discussions with contractor's license that's not in the procurement record that I'd like to clarify. Just three questions, if I may.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Basin?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Could you pull up Exhibit A, procurement record, base number 2097? This was your memo to Ms. Jean Ariola
I guess, summarizing or describing your discussion contractor's license. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So in that document, you said that, let me see, I'm sorry. You spoke to contractor's license to confirm whether the bidders held the required licenses required in the IFB. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you know which role contractor's licensing was applying when you contacted them?
No.
When you spoke with contractor's licensing, did you ask whether they held these licenses or whether they were authorized to do the work?
I asked if they held the licenses.
My last question is, if a bidder does not hold those specialty license, but is authorized to perform the work, would that bidder have been responsive?
No, I would say no, because it was in the IFB as something that needed to be submitted.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you.
Clarifying question. So again, and you've done procurement for at least 8 or 9 years now, Guam procurement law, BDOE-JAA.
Yes.
If a bidder has a problem with a specification, there are several options. In this procurement, were the bidders given an opportunity to submit written questions?
Yes.
Did anyone question whether an A or B license would meet the C subspecialty license requirements?
No.
Did anyone protest the method of source selection or specification requiring all of the licenses very clearly?
No.
Until we received the protests in August 2024.
Absolutely.
No further questions.
No additional questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's your last question?
Yes, Mr. Public Auditor. At this time, the airport satisfied with the record put before you.
Thank you. And
we don't plan on calling any questions.
So, what was the plan for the two heater refiling findings, or did you want to really?
I'm happy to submit proposed findings to at least lay out where we're at, and then I don't necessarily need proposing remedies.
Yeah.
And I'd like to also submit a remedies in this matter.
Yeah, I'm fine submitting a findings of fact motion so far.
Please. February 21st. You're going to be gone though, right, Mark?
That should be enough time. I'll be back before that too.
Okay.
We can do both on that day.
Yes.
Remedies and okay.
Thank you. We're off the record at 3:13 to 14.